Hi, this is Bill Arnold. Missed a show or need me talking to help you sleep tonight? I have several solutions to that situation. Here are the podcasts from the show. You are the best for listening and supporting Faith Radio. And a warm welcome to Afternoons with me. This is Bill Arnold. I am so glad it is Wednesday and we get this time together. We're going to be enjoying a couple of fantastic hours today. Dr. Glenn Pickering is in studio, and you know what that means. Lots of questions. We're going to deal with all kinds of issues regarding anxiety today because we live in a world that is filled with it. And then Rick Manson and John Afonso will be in the studio as well. They're apologists and evangelists, and they do it all. We're going to be having a lot of Q&A today, so I think your questions, you can get them ready and send them over at any time. 877-933-2484. Rachel's in the phone room, so we can take calls as well. 877-933-2484. Sometimes when you need a break from anxiety, it helps to laugh. And if you're in the Fargo area, if you're listening on 102.5 FM or 1200 AM at KFNW, May 31, end of the month, we're going to be at Bethel Church in Fargo, and it's going to be the comedy night that we had here at the University of Northwestern for the 70th anniversary. We promoted it pretty heavily for several months, so maybe you heard us talk about it. Now we thought, 70th anniversary, that lasts a full year. Why don't we take that show out and meet some of the great listeners in other areas? So we're coming to Fargo on the 31st. We sold out here in the Twin Cities, 1,400 people laughing hysterically. Do not miss this night. I promise you will have a great time. And if it's not the funniest show you've ever seen, I'll give you a personal guarantee. Bring me your ticket and proof of purchase, and I will personally tell you how sorry I am. So go to myfaithradio.com to buy tickets. We'll take a 60-second break and bring on Dr. Glenn Pickering.
The CSB Worldview Study Bible aims to be a resource that equips readers to discuss, defend, and clearly state the truth of the Bible and the reason for our hope with others. Featuring study notes and articles by Christian scholars, the CSB Worldview Study Bible will help you understand the scriptures and share it with others. We're giving away one copy each week this month. Register to win at myfaithradio.com today. There are more ways than ever before to listen to Faith Radio, and the newest is using your Amazon Echo Smart device. If you have an Echo Smart device in your home or office, enable the Faith Radio skill on the Alexa app or with your voice by asking your Amazon Echo to enable Faith Radio. Once you've enabled the skill, just ask your Amazon Echo to play Faith Radio. Listen to the live stream or any Faith Radio podcast hands-free anytime on your Echo Smart device. Find out more at myfaithradio.com.
Welcome back to the program. It's 7 minutes after the hour. I'm always looking forward to any time I get a chance with Glenn. He's in studio, Dr. Glenn Pickering. And if you know anything about his background, you know he started as an engineer, and then he graduated to seminary, became a pastor, and then after that he got his PhD in psychology. So he's not all there. He's he's got a lot on the plate that he takes and melds together into an amazing perspective that you're not going to hear anywhere else. And he's written several books. My favorite book he's written is called Tag. It's the oldest game in the world in relationships, where you play the game tag. We'll talk about that if time permits. But Glenn can be reached at glennpickering.com, GlennPickering, if you want to go check out his good-looking picture and learn about his work. You can just head over there. Glenn, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's always fun to be here.
Always is fun. And when we talk about the idea of an anxiety, I think all of us to some degree struggle with it, even though the Bible tells us not to. So let's get that out on the table today.
All right. That's a great topic. I think there are many of us who struggle with anxiety in all sorts of forms. And when I give a seminar, I wish I had a little whiteboard all my listeners could hear. I tell them how I spell the word anxiety. I spell it just the way it's normally spelled, except the I in the middle is capitalized and really bold, because I really think, see, at the word I is at the center of all my anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about the sentences that make us anxious, the sentences that run through our head, you'll notice they all start with that same word. I got to take care of that. I got to fix that. I'm responsible for that. How am I ever going to take care of that? When am I going to have time for that? How can I ever see? And as soon as I think I have to do that by myself, so I tell myself basically that I have a problem and I'm alone with it. See, it's the belief that I'm alone with it that actually makes me anxious.
Mm-hmm.
So we think that there are situations that make us anxious. But really, it's thinking that we have to handle those situations by ourselves that actually makes us anxious.
Well, what about if we create a problem with someone in relationship and then we're so mad at that person, now we feel that the problem has to be solved and I have to do it by myself.
Right.
So and now not only do I have to solve it alone, but now I'm mad at someone else to boot.
Right, exactly. And I can get really all wound up in that kind of I thinking. And there's a reason why, which is just how you started the program talking about how God says to us over and over in the scriptures that be not anxious, for I'm with you. So he doesn't just tell us not to be anxious. He tells us how not to be anxious. And I've really, really come to understand this. The actual antidote to anxiety is the word we.
Hmm.
As soon as I think I have to take care of that, I have to fix that, I'm going to feel anxious. Because, you know, you've heard me talk before on the show about how everything goes in this order, you know, think, feel, do. Mm-hmm. My thinking drives my feelings drive my behavior. So if my thought is that I'm alone, my feeling will be anxious. So we need to understand that my feeling of being anxious is a direct result of thinking that I'm alone or that I have to handle that by myself. So as soon as I even start to feel myself getting anxious, I think, who could help me with this? Who could help talk through this with me? Who could I use as a resource? I'm going to turn to prayer and ask God for God's help in this. So I'm going to do everything I can to remind myself that that belief that I have to handle this by myself is simply not true.
Mm-hmm. Glenn, what is it like for a person that maybe lives with an anxiety disorder every day? It's their daily diet.
Well, you're talking to one of those people, so.
You mean you?
Absolutely.
Okay. Now that you admitted to it like us, I get too, huh?
That's right. Yep. Yeah, I literally don't teach people anything that I don't.
Okay.
Work on my own self. So, yes. So I promise you that I have a tendency, like any time a problem happens or a situation comes up, I can literally hear that sentence go in the back of my head. Well, I'll just take care of that. I'll just fix that. Mm-hmm. I'll take care of that for you. And I just know that sentence, even though it's super automatic for me, is really not true or helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of what makes me anxious is I so often think that thought. And I'm learning very gradually to consciously override that thought, that even though it runs through the back of my head, I get to be what I call a second responder. I get to stop long enough to think consciously instead of letting that automatic thought run my life and think, no, 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 that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of people would be on my team. Lots of people would help me with this if they knew I needed help.
Let's talk about the 12 or 14-pound meatball on our shoulders called our brain, and make a reference to the black dog that bit you when you were a kid.
Right. I was telling Bill just prior to the show that we have this part of our brain called the amygdala, A-M-Y-G-D-L-A, amygdala, which its only job is to remember things that were dangerous to us and to compare everything that's happening right now to things that were hurtful to us in the past. So I got bit by a dog when I was younger. And so even now, all these years later, if a dog starts running towards me, my amygdala gets triggered thinking, this looks a lot like the situation that was dangerous to you. And then it kicks that adrenaline into my body, that fight or flight thing people are always talking about, and like we were talking about before the show, and that happens in 12 milliseconds.
Okay, give a point of reference for a good experience, just so we can give our listeners an understanding of just how short that is.
Right. Now, normally, most of our emotions get processed, they go through our limbic system, then maybe something happens that makes me feel happy. My old brain picks that up, runs it through my prefrontal cortex, the part of us that makes conscious decisions, and that part of my brain thinks, yeah, this is a good thing. And then it releases those little hormones in my body that make me happy. And that takes about 250 milliseconds. So
okay.
About a quarter of a second, 250. The time it takes for my amygdala to think this is dangerous and the amount of time it takes before it floods my system with adrenaline is 12 milliseconds.
Wow.
So I literally can't think fast enough to not have that reaction.
So all you are left with is your second reaction, because your first one is going to happen, period.
Right. It will happen literally faster than I can have a thought.
Okay.
And so one of the things I teach all my clients is about becoming what I call a second responder. We're going to have that first thought. The whole game of tag in relationships or just any fear that I have in general is triggered by that thought that I need to protect or defend myself. And that reaction goes through my body so fast, I literally can't stop it. But what I can do when I feel that reaction happening to me is to let my conscious brain kick in and think, okay, Glenn, here's what's really happening. You're going to be okay, blah, blah, blah. So, for example, I'm incredibly socially anxious. So if I'm going to be walking into a room with a bunch of people I don't know, I'm so anxious it's almost paralyzing. And in the past, I would have found some excuse not to go, even at the last minute. And now, honestly, I walk into a room, I still have that same reaction. I can still literally feel that thought getting triggered. And I say to myself, Glenn, I know this used to be scary to you, but here's what's really going to happen. You're going to walk into that room. You're going to start talking to a couple people. You're going to pretty soon be really glad that you're here. You're going to meet at least one person tonight that you think you were so glad that you met. That's what's actually going to happen. And I'm telling myself that as I walk through that door.
Wow. Little refresher course on the way into a social activity.
Right. So I literally can't stop that intensely fast physiological reaction that says, Glenn, you should be scared about this.
So should we be coaching and encouraging others in their second response? Because if we say to someone, you don't have to make that choice. You don't have to have that thought. And the truth is, I can't help that thought.
No, I literally can't stop that first reaction. It is literally so fast. There's nothing I can do physically or mentally that's that fast. But what I can do is I get better and better feeling that reaction, noticing it happening, and remembering, yes, but I still have freedom in Christ. And people say, Glenn, what does freedom in Christ mean? And I promise you, it really boils down to this. At that moment, I get that if I'm willing to just stop and just be prayerful for 2 seconds, God's going to remind me, I'm with you, it's going to be okay, you have a way to deal with this, here's what's going to happen, here's what I want you to do first. And I'm just going to feel so clearly that I have an option other than that panic reaction. But I literally have to use my freedom in Christ. I have to slow down long enough for that to kick in.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't have any freedom in that first reaction. I literally don't have any choice.
I'm going to take a break here in just a sec. There was a TV show on years ago. It was called Lie to Me, and it was basically the story of a guy who solved crimes by or solved, I think it was people caught in lying situations by studying their micro expressions on their faces. And there is that fraction of a second where your face literally can't lie.
Right.
And he would be able to read that.
Right.
And I found that fascinating. And I think I signed up to take this guy's course for $20 or something just to learn how to distinguish the features because I just found it interesting.
Are you lying about how much it costs? That seems way too cheap.
I think it was 3 installments of $20. So it was $60 total.
I knew. See, I saw that look on your face. I knew you were lying.
But I remember sending $20 at some point. I can't remember. Anyway, Dr. Glenn Pickering is in studio. So we want to take your calls or your texts, 877-933-2484. Do you deal with a little anxiety? And maybe you've been dealing with it for a long time. Do people say to you, hey, you got to knock that anxiety off? Hey, maybe you should read your Bible more. Hey, have you confessed all unknown sin? All that stuff is good, but maybe it's not working for you. And maybe you still got anxiety and you got to figure out what to do next. We'll help sort that out today. We'll get that covered. 877-933-2484. You can call, you can remain anonymous, or you can send a text. Either way, we'll get your questions on the air. Welcome back to the show, 19 after the hour. Dr. Glenn Pickering's in studio. We're having a discussion about anxiety. Glenn, we started talking about how in the word anxiety is the big letter I in the middle.
Right.
And if you focus on I, anxiety will follow.
Well, right.
Well, okay, so what should we be focusing on?
Thank you. So I talk to people who say, well, Glenn, I'm going to be going off to my family. I'm going to be going off to a meeting, and there are people there that make me anxious, or that situation makes me anxious. I think, okay. It's really important to think, okay, instead of focusing on going to that meeting or going to that family gathering and thinking, how do I look? How do they think of me? How am I coming off? Do I look okay? all of which will make me anxious, I can go and think, okay, I'm going to really seek to be a welcoming force. I'm going to try and make everybody I meet there feel like I was really glad to see them, like they were really welcome here. I want to really focus on other people and let them know that I'm paying attention to them when I'm listening. I'm just going to really focus on trying to help other people feel I'm so glad I came. And in that process, I promise you, I will no longer be anxious. Because remember I said the antidote to anxiety is the word we, as opposed to the big I in the middle of the word. And we can be anything, but me looking out for somebody else, caring for somebody else, welcoming somebody else. Well, see, that's a we. That's a me and you, and that's super helpful. And I might not be able to do that myself, so then there's another we involved where me and God are all sort of talking. So as I'm approaching a person, I'm just trying to sort of pray in the quiet of my mind, thinking, what would this person need? How can I welcome them? And I'm just really trying to let me and God sort of be speaking about how can I be welcoming, caring, or gentle with that person. And so then I'm not an I on either level. I'm a we with that person who I'm trying to be helpful to, and I'm a we with God who I'm trying to let help me as I move towards that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, I really am not anxious,
mm-hmm.
even though I'm literally genetically predisposed to be very anxious.
Okay, here's a question, Glenn,
yeah.
from a listener, and this probably has to do a little bit with what you talked about being in social situations.
Yep.
This is in regards to dating.
Okay.
I feel that I know what I deserve from a guy before going into a date with them. However, once I'm on the date, I find myself anxious about opening up and letting my true self come through. How can I work through this? I'm worried about being too much.
Right, and I think that's a great example of what I just talked about. I talk a lot with clients who are going off on first dates or second dates, and one of the things I say is, you could worry about how you look, or if they're good enough for you, or if they're good enough to deserve you, you should be opening up. All of those sentences will make you anxious. Just even thinking those thoughts will make you anxious. Or I could go and thinking, you know what? I'm just going to try and be a really good listener. I'm going to try and pay attention. I'm going to help them feel welcome because they're probably anxious. I'm just going to try and make it so they feel like, oh, I'm glad to see you. Thanks for coming. I was really looking forward to this. Just anything I can do or say to help them feel welcome or not anxious. And I'm going to really make a point when they're talking about listening to them, making sure I'm listening really hard, summarizing what they are saying so they can tell I'm tracking with them. What are all the things I can do to help them feel cared for? And again, in that process, I will be way less anxious. Now, there's also a pretty good chance they'll like me.
Mm-hmm. What about if they're not a great conversationalist and all of a sudden you feel like you got to start picking up the slack here, and because you want them to get to know you a little bit, you might start trying to open up. But if you do that, then all of a sudden your true self might come through and maybe they're not going to like you.
Well, it's always possible they won't, of course. But it's always important to be just, instead of that, asking myself a more empowering question. See, to ask the question, do they like me, is very disempowering. Because it leaves all the power about it up to them. I'm going to think, I'm going to pay attention, I'm going to make them feel welcome, I'm going to ask questions, I'm going to listen, so that at the end of the time, I know whether I like them.
Mm.
When I want to see that person again.
Mm-hmm.
And see, it's way more helpful, but it's also way more empowering. Like it takes me out of the place where I feel disempowered. And it's like, no, actually, it's up to me to decide whether I like them. Which means, again, you'll be your way better self.
Mm-hmm. So that's a nice little pep talk to give yourself.
Right.
Go in as a welcome person that's going to make them feel comfortable and glad you're with them. And I want to listen. And
then I'll decide whether I want to see them again.
Mm-hmm.
And I always tell people on a first date that the only goal of the first date is to decide whether you want a second date.
Mm-hmm.
So you should just come out of there not hoping they liked you. You should come out of there thinking, I need to pay enough attention to how a conversation goes and to the things they say so I know for sure in my own heart whether I want to see that person again or not.
Awesome. All right, Glenn's book that I love so much that he written is called Playing Tag, You're Not It. It's a book filled with wisdom and examples and actually some good challenging little exercises to help you overcome your limitations and build a richer, fuller life. I've got 3 copies I am more than happy to give away. If you would like to get in the drawing to get a hold of one of these little gems, you just email me, bill@myfaithradio.com, and in the subject line, just write the word TAG, T-A-G. And then make sure you put in your name, address, and I will make sure that you get it if you're one of the winners. All right. So let's get back to anxiety, Glenn, because I know some of anxiety is good. I mean, sometimes when I come in and I feel a little bit of anxiety, it helps me do a better show.
Oh, absolutely. I years and years ago, I knew I wanted to like put on seminars and be a teacher, but I was so anxious in front of a group, I could literally hardly think.
Mm-hmm.
I could pretty much only say the things I'd written out word for word in front of me. And obviously, that's not exactly too charismatic, and it wasn't very fun to listen to. I had a picture in my mind of the kind of speaker I wanted to be, but I couldn't see a route there. Then one day I went to a seminar led by Dr. Bill O'Hanlon, who taught years ago back about brief psychotherapy. And he was one of my heroes. I mean, he taught me really cool stuff. And I went to one of his seminars, and he taught just the way I wish I could.
Mm.
It was like he was just having a conversation with us. And I don't mean by that that it rambled. Clearly, he had a very definite outline in his head that he was moving through. But he did it in a way that didn't feel forced. It didn't feel like he was reading from a script. It just really felt like he was just teaching us in this very conversational style. And afterwards, I gathered up the courage, and I went up and told him that I thought it was a great seminar and that I wished I could be a speaker like he was. And he nodded his head, said a few encouraging words. That was kind of that. And then I was gathering up my stuff, getting ready to go, and Bill O'Hanlon comes up behind me and said, "Glenn, you got a second?" I'm like, "Yeah." I mean, you know, if your hero says, "Glenn, you got a second?"
Pretty much say yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah, except more like, He said, "Glenn, the person who's going to give me a ride to the airport kind of bailed, and I wonder if you can give me a ride to the airport."
That'll work.
Oh, my goodness. Sometimes it's almost like there really is a God. And so on the way to the airport, I explained to him. So he said, "So, Glenn, tell me more about what it is you mean when you're not the kind of speaker you want to be." And I said, I talked about how I get up on the stage, I got all locked up, I got so anxious, et cetera, et cetera. And he listened to me very carefully, and I love to this day that he did that. And he said, "Glenn, your problem's not that you get anxious. Your problem is that you get anxious about being anxious.
Hmm.
You feel your heart beating a little faster, your breathing coming a little more shallower, the adrenaline kicking through you, and you think, oh, no, it's happening to me again. And you get anxious that it's, quote, unquote, happening to you again." He said, "When I get ready to go up on stage, my heart beats faster, I get the adrenaline running through me, my breath comes a little shallower, and I think, great, I'm ready. Let's go kick butt."
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. When it's time to do something, we have to be sort of the center where you're teaching, leading, doing a seminar, doing one of your comedy shows. You don't want to come out flat.
No.
It would bore the stuffing out of your audience. You want to come out with that high level of energy. And he just taught me not to be afraid of that.
All right.
And it was super helpful to
me. Yeah, I love that. Now, can you take something like anger or depression or something, can you cut that in half if you stop being so angry about how angry you are?
Yes, in fact.
In fact, you can cut it in half.
Oftentimes, we actually get angry not about how angry we are. Like, let's say, for example, back in the day, I walk into a room or I start walking into a room, I get real anxious, and I don't want to go in the room, so I leave. I would now be mad at myself for leaving.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I'd be angry about being anxious. Like
right.
When we have certain patterns that keep happening, that it feels like it takes us over, we get mad that keeps happening to us.
Okay, we have lots more with Dr. Glenn Pickering.
Yep.
You can go to glennpickering.com, GlennPickering, to learn more about Glenn. And also, make sure you send us your questions. You can call and ask that live, or you can send a text, 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Be right back. I am so glad you're listening today. I am so glad you tuned in to hear Dr. Glenn Pickering, who's in studio. We're fielding all kinds of questions, concerns, issues you might have about anxiety, maybe your history with it, maybe something you'd like to do to deal with it. There's a listener, Glenn, named Dave. He said, "I wake up with anxiety at 4 a.m, and I'm just anxious for the day all over again. How do I address this?"
That's a great question. And I used to get up every morning anxious. Like, I was literally anxious as soon as my feet hit the floor every day. And I mean every day. And so when I really, really first started understanding that anxiety is about thinking that you're alone, I asked my wife if she'd start a little experiment with me. Where every time as soon as we woke up in the morning, we'd roll over, I'd hold on to her, and we'd each say a prayer over each other for our day. And we still do this all these years later because it's so helpful. And in that process, see, I remember that I'm not alone because I'm holding on to my wife, so I'm not alone. And I'm praying to God, so I'm not alone. And then I get up. I'm not anxious anymore. So if somebody says, Glenn, I wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and I don't have a wife to hold on to, well then, I think, okay. There are still many things you can do to help you not feel alone. For example, well, let's start here. Well, Einstein used to say, the same brain that got me into this problem is not going to get me out. So our brain gets sort of stuck in a place, and because we're stuck there, we're not actually going to be able to get ourselves out. So if somebody says, Glenn, I'm in bed at 4 o'clock in the morning and I'm anxious, I say, get up. If you just keep laying there, I promise you, your mind will just keep spinning on whatever you're anxious about because the brain that got me into that is not going to be able to get me out.
Mm-hmm.
Get up. Now, and I'm going to want you to experiment. If getting up, literally getting out of your bed, going to a chair in the living room, sitting there and praying is helpful to you, great, do that. If listening to Christian music inspires you and is helpful, get up and go do that. If reading your Bible or a particular passage is helpful to you because then you feel God's presence, get up and go do that. So get up and literally do anything that helps let somebody else's brain help you move from the place you're at. Because A, you're not going to get yourself out, and B, whether I'm reading the Bible or at prayer or listening to a great song, or even if I get up and just say a prayer on behalf of somebody else, see, at that moment, again, I'm not so focused on my own self, which is what gets me in that cycle in the first place. Mm-hmm. So I say, get up, do something that will help somebody else get your brain out of that place where you're stuck, because mm-hmm. you will literally not get yourself out.
What if you're going through a period of your life where you know basically that for the next year or the next 2 years, there's going to be a sort of a big, heavy thing over your life.
Right.
And so you have to go, it's going to be 2 years before this thing ends.
Right. And it's probably true. Now, the tricky part about that is it gets me off of the place I find peace. And here's what I mean. God exists in the eternal right now. That's why when Moses said to God, who shall I say sent me? God says, tell them I am sent you. God exists in the right now. So if I'm worried about the past, I'll get depressed or anxious. If I'm all worried about the future, I'll get anxious because both of those places, then I go by myself. God literally can't go there with me, so I will feel anxious because I'm by myself. The one place I'm not anxious is in the present, connected to my God, and remembering that I'm a part of something way bigger than myself. So whether it's 2 weeks or 2 months or 2 years, it really is important to think every single day, I'm not going to think, oh my gosh, it's going to be 2 years. I'm going to think, what do I need to do today? How can God help me today? What do I need to pray about today? Who are the people who could help me with that today? What's at least one step I could do in that direction today? And I can just, and I need to really literally focus every single day on what can I do about that today? And who can help me today? And what do I need to include in my prayers about that today? So that today I don't feel overwhelmed by that. Because as soon as I start thinking about the 2 years, I will be overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm. When does an experience move into the category of, oh, that sounds like you had a little bit of a panic attack?
Oh, I actually see a number of clients who have panic attacks. And it actually goes a little bit with what I was talking about Bill Hanlon, that we get anxious, which I totally understand. And then if we're not careful, we get so anxious about being anxious, we feel like, oh, my gosh, that's happening to me. Mm-hmm. Which ramps us up, which then we get ramped up, and then we think, see, it really is happening to me, and we literally get more and more ramped up about how anxious we are. Mm-hmm. Now, remember I said when we're anxious, we're too focused on ourselves, which I don't mean judgmentally. I don't mean like we're selfish people. That's not it at all. I just mean we're a little too aware of ourselves. So I'm always thinking, okay, when I start getting anxious, what could I do to focus on somebody else? Who could I call? Who could I lift up? Who could I write a note to? Who could I email? What could I do right now to try to make a difference in some positive way in the world? And that will help get me out of my panic, and I'll start to settle down and get my body. Then it takes a little while to wear off that adrenaline, but my body will start doing that as soon as I quit fueling it back up.
Mm-hmm. When you're in relationship with somebody who suffers from some of these things and you consider them to be kind of irrational, it's like, come on, let's just do this, you know, and all of a sudden you feel like they don't understand. And maybe you don't understand.
And you probably don't.
And you probably don't.
Right. So when I talk to people who are married to people, when I talk to clients, for example, who are married to people who are real anxious, I say, they just need you to be comforting to them. So if we're in an airport And I just hear that our flight is late, which means I know we're going to miss our next flight, and I can literally feel myself getting anxious. And, of course, my wife, Gwen, is sitting by me, knows perfectly well that that's happening to me.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say it's not subtle.
Yeah.
And remember, the same brain that got me into that stuck place is not going to get me out. So she just reaches over. She'll put her hand on my knee really gently, and she'll just say, "We'll figure it out." And see, that touch tells me that I'm not alone, and the word "we, we'll figure it out" tells me that I'm not alone, and I immediately start de-escalating. So you can get all frustrated that they get anxious, or just realize there's actually a really sweet role for you there, where you get to be the one who's very gently comforting to them.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a sweet little thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
It'll make them feel better, it'll make you feel great.
Yeah. Does that apply for parents as they're trying to comfort their children?
Absolutely. When I just think, when my kid's wound up, if I get all wound up about their being wound up, that's not helpful to them.
Yeah, but maybe as a parent, you want to fix the situation. I know that sounds crazy, but
that's not a maybe. That's going to be for sure true. And I have to remember that even though I want to fix the situation, what I actually need to do is if I can just comfort my kid so their brain slows down long enough to kick back into gear, they will know what to do.
Okay.
That's why, same thing with I have a spouse. They're anxious. I don't have to tell them what to do. I just have to be comforting to them for a minute until they do this. Okay. Then their brain will kick in and they'll start thinking about what they should do, and that's great. I literally only have to be a person that just helps them kind of come back down, which I can do in any way that's helpful to them.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have somebody in my life who is anxious, I just say to them, what are the things I could do that would be comforting to you when you get anxious? And if I know 3 or 4 or 5 things that usually work, I'll just start doing those things when I see them get anxious.
That's a very, very helpful exercise, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and very loving.
Very loving.
Right.
But it also would require some vulnerability. And
right.
Gee, if you have another one of these little moments where you feel a little panicked,
mm-hmm.
how would you best like me to respond?
Right.
Is that a fair question?
It's a great question.
Okay.
As long as they can tell I mean it. You know, mm-hmm. You've talked about the game of tag a little bit. See, I can ask that question in a very tag-playing way. Well, when you get wound up, is there anything I can do to help?
Yeah.
I can say it in a way that just makes them feel bad about that they get wound up. Or I can say, hon, I know sometimes you get anxious. What are the things I can do that would be comforting to you at that time? So I can ask that question, and I'm very likely to get a loving response.
Versus how can I fix you when you throw one of your little attacks?
Yeah. When you have this obvious problem that I don't have, and so you're obviously inferior to me, and I'm pretty condescending about it, but if I have to fix you, I suppose I will.
What
that's
is it?
A sense of, hey, I want to be there for you when you need me to be there for
uh-huh.
you.
But it also is suggesting, Glenn, that these caregivers, these people in your life who are mm-hmm. want to be part of your team,
right.
Need also a skill set.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
And is that, what if that's not in their toolbox, then what?
Well, here's a really cool thing. They don't have to be good at it. My wife, Gwen, will tell you, she's not the most natural toucher in the world. It's not necessarily a thing that comes real easily to her. But she does know, if Glenn gets anxious and I put my hand gently on his leg and tell him we're going to figure it out, he will feel better. Okay. Now, naturally, over time, she gets better at it, of course. But honestly, you don't have to be great at it.
Yeah. Glenn, what about anxiety that comes from the fear of losing control? Obviously, there is, who controls anything anyway? God controls everything. And the creator of the universe and the person that, breathed life into us knows our lives better than we do. So he's absolutely trustworthy.
Right.
But as we live in this fallen world, we have these feelings of, I feel like I'm losing control of my life. I don't feel like I have the purpose that I know I should have at this stage of my life.
Right.
I might be alone. I might be in a situation where if I don't get something figured out, I'm going to go crazy.
Right. Now, if people tell me, Glenn, I get anxious when I'm out of control. I know I'm likely to be talking to a person who is in one of two situations. One, they're a person who got abused or neglected growing up, who really learned you just can't count on anybody else. I just have to do it myself. Nobody's going to be there for me. Nobody's going to care. In fact, if I reach out for help, I'm just going to get ridiculed, so I just take care of it myself. So anytime they don't feel like they're in charge of what's happening to them, they'll get panicky because, again, back to their amygdala tells them, hey, in the past when you've had to trust other people, depend on other people, need help from other people, bad stuff happened, don't go there. And they get anxious just thinking about the thought about doing that. And so as soon as they're not in control of everything that's happening around them, they get that panicky sort of feeling. And if you're a listener and that happens to you, I want to say, please don't judge that about yourself. It's just it. It's a learned response from growing up in a really icky situation, and I'd like you to be a little graceful. Now, I also want you to start asking people for help, starting with the people who are least scary to you, so you can gradually get over that, so you can start building that second responder where you think, hey, there are some people who are not trustworthy, but there are some people who are, and I can reach out to those people so you can gradually get better at it. But it starts with not judging yourself for having that reaction. The second thing, when people start telling me that they're feeling out of control, it's very likely that they've said yes to too many things. So, for example, I know this about myself. If there's a new ministry that starts at my church and somebody says, hey, Glenn, you could be part of that, and I hear myself saying out loud, yeah, I could do that. That's not mine. I have to be really clear that just because I could do it doesn't mean I'm called to do it. In fact, the fact that that sentence goes through my mind is a pretty clear sign I'm not called to it. Because if I really was, I would think, wow, that's just what I've been praying about. I've been asking God for that. If I just think to myself, yeah, I could do that, it's not mine. And I will do it poorly, and I'll get in the way of the person who's supposed to be doing it, who would have done it well, and I'm going to tell people I feel so overwhelmed, I feel out of control in my own life, right? Because I say yes to things that aren't actually mine. Mm. So then I just challenge people to say, okay, cool. What are the things in your life that you're only doing because you could, not because you felt called to it? Mm-hmm. And they're going to tell me, I hate to let people down, and I think, let's be honest, you already are. You said yes to too many things. You're not doing any of them well, so you're letting everybody down. So how about dropping half of those things off your list so you could actually do the other half of those things really well?
Mm. Is part of that laziness that I can't stand up and just say, uh-uh, I ain't doing that?
Well, for me, I can only tell you about myself. For me, it's about that part of me that thinks I need to please other people. So I say yes just because I don't want to disappoint people. That's why I said that sort of silly thing about, but see, if I say yes to too many things, I will disappoint mm-hmm. people.
What about fear of rejection or disappointing others?
Well, I get, you know, that part of us that thinks we need to please people, I think it really does come from that fear of rejection. Like, you're only going to like me if I say yes. But then if I say yes to everything, I never get the chance to find out, actually, there are lots of people, even if I'm just honest, still really like me, enjoy me. But until I start saying yes when I mean yes and no when I mean no, like the Bible says, I don't ever get to find that out. Mm-hmm. So I'm stuck with that belief that nobody would like me if I didn't say yes.
Mm-hmm. All right, Dr. Glenn Pickering's in my studio. We'll have time for some calls or text messages, 877-933-2484. When we come back, I'm going to ask him a little bit more about playing tag.
All right.
We'll be back in just a minute. The big hand is on the 46, so I'll do the math, carry the one. That's 14 minutes until the top of the hour. Dr. Glenn Pickering is in studio.
You're good.
And we're talking about anxiety. And if you go to his website, glennpickering.com, G-L-E-N-N, two N's, P-I-C-K-E-R-I-N-G, and you scroll down about midway, you'll see a offer that says, questions? Schedule a free 20-minute consultation. So you can fill out the form and send it to Glenn, and you have an opportunity to speak to him for a free 20-minute consultation. And I promise you, because of the way he thinks and the way his brain works, he will condense things and synthesize. That's a big word. I'm not even sure what it means. But he will get things down to an amazing, concentrated response in a short amount of time. He'll be glad you did it. That's glennpickering.com. All right, Glenn, let's talk a little bit about sort of the thing Jesus did often when he would do something that you're going to share with us, which I find interesting.
Okay, cool. So far we've talked about what can you do in a situation if you're anxious to kind of deal with your anxiety.
Yes.
Which is all good. But there are also things you can do proactively to be less anxious in the first place. And I see Jesus modeling that all the time. And I think this to myself all the time. If you read a longer block of the gospel, not just the sort of shorter little passages we like to read in church, but like longer parts of it, you'll notice this pattern, which is that every story that had Jesus in it ends the same way. He leaves. He goes out to a lonely place to pray. Him and the disciples go to a lonely village and they're quiet. Or him and the disciples and the women who travel with him and take care of him out of their means go to a whole different place and they're quiet for a while. And we're not talking about a short little while, because oftentimes the next story will start by saying something like, and it was during those days. So we're talking about
period of time.
Yeah, not a 5-minute power nap. So what you see is this. So Jesus takes some time out to be with God, to be with his disciple brothers, to let the women who travel with him take really good care of him. So he gets filled up with love. Then he goes out there, does some miraculous thing, gives all that love away. then it comes back in, it gets filled back up again, and then goes out again. So there's always, you notice if you read more of the gospel, there's this very interesting and very clear sort of back and forthness to the way that he runs his life. And I think we need to sort of role model our own lives in the same way, because here's what I know. The more I don't get my quiet time, my prayer time, my meditation, my Bible reading time, my devotion, the things that kind of recreate me, the more when I have to deal with the world, I find myself getting real anxious, kind of irritable. I find things way harder to deal with. I just, because my well is just not full. I'm running on empty all the time, so I don't have much to, so I'm never very far from the edge. Whereas if I do what Jesus does, well, so every day I take time to do the things that fill me back up, then I can deal with a world that doesn't feel as overwhelming and doesn't make me as anxious and doesn't feel as like I'm so close to falling off the edge. So all the things we talked about so far are things you can do once you get anxious. This is the thing you can do to help yourself not be anxious in the first place. So just follow that role model and say, okay, if I'm going to spend some time of my day, every single day, pretty much without fail, doing things that literally put God's love back in me, that sense of peace back in me, that quiet sort of centeredness that back in me, What is that for me? And please understand, there's no one-size-fits-all. It's different for everybody. But you have to just notice, what are the things in my life that bring me a sense of peace, and how could I do more of those things? Like if I was super intentional like Jesus was about taking that time, what would that look like?
In John 14:27, Jesus says, "Peace is what I leave with you. It is my own peace that I give you."
Right.
I don't give it as the world does. Do not be worried and upset. Do not be afraid. So when he says that, and if I make myself get into a space and place where I can be with him and getting that my tank refilled, is there a chance that his peace that only he gives will fill me?
Absolutely. In fact, that is the way, that is the best way, I think, because, you know, right after that, he talks about the vine and the branches, like, if you're not connected to me, you can't do a whole lot.
Right.
But by being connected to me, so my love and my peace runs through you, then, yeah, you can do all kinds of amazing things with your life. So, yes, I think it's about being connected.
Glenn, why are some of the simple things so hard to do?
Isn't that true?
Oh, my. Everything you've said is just, like, spot on. And I go, of course, get alone, get time with the Lord, study, meditate, pray. That will fill your tank.
Right. And it will make you way less anxious.
Yes.
Because remember, anxious means I feel alone. But if I start my day or I have some block during my day where I'm connected to God and to all the other loving, inspirational teachers that I love to read, all the great songs that I love to listen to, so I'm literally surrounded, as Hebrews says, by that great cloud of witnesses, then I get to go in situations and remember, hey, I'm not alone. And I'm way likely to be less anxious. But if I don't do that, I do sort of walk in every situation feeling like I really am alone, and I'm very likely then to feel anxious.
Huh. So, and of course, you've said this before, that the number one strategy the enemy has is to turn what God, Jesus, promises into a big lie, saying, no, you are going to be alone. There's going to be no one with you. You're going through this all by yourself.
And nobody cares. And if you ask anybody, they'll just act like you're a big bother, so don't even bother asking. So that I don't ever ask, and that I never find out that that lie is a lie. So I just want to gently say to any of our listeners, whatever lies you have that run through the back of your head that keep you from asking for help, for saying yes when people offer to help, but just letting yourself be part of a team instead of doing it yourself, I just want you to think, you know what? I'm going to start getting better at saying yes. I'm going to start getting better at asking for help. And I promise you, it will be a little uncomfortable at first, but I promise you, our God wants us to be a little uncomfortable, which I don't mean in a bad way. I think our God is a God of transformation. So my God has always wanted to change me, shift me, grow me, which means I'm always taking one step out of my comfort zone. So if I'm on a godly path, I'm always a little bit uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people say, well, Glenn, I think I'm being called by God to do this or that, but I don't know, I'm kind of uncomfortable at the thought. I think, well, then it must be true that God's calling you. Because your human ego likes safety and predictability, and you wouldn't come up with that by yourself.
Right. So I want to, in the time remaining, talk a little bit about tag.
Okay, great.
And how long might we be playing tag, not knowing we're playing tag, and setting a precedence for a relationship that needs to be worked on?
Right. That game is just mean, and it takes over a relationship. If I think I have to protect myself, then as soon as you say, hey, Glenn, that thing you just said kind of hurt my feelings, instead of doing what I should do, which is say, oh, I'm really sorry, what happened? Help me understand that so I don't make that mistake again. See, I'm just open, I'm willing, I want to learn. That's what God would want me to do. But see, if I think my goal in life is to protect myself, which is what the game was all about, I defend myself. I think, oh, you shouldn't be so sensitive. I wasn't being hurt. I was just being silly. You shouldn't take it like that. And in the process of, quote, unquote, protecting myself, what I'm really doing is attacking you, which just makes you feel bad, like you really are alone, like nobody really understands you, which now sets you up to kind of keep that pattern going of thinking that you're by yourself.
But if I bully you a little bit, mm-hmm. or say, you know, I was just joking around, you didn't have to take it so hard, right. All of a sudden now it's back on you and I'm not it.
Right, you're not it, and now I'm the bad one for having these bad feelings. And I learned two things from that. I walk away feeling bad, and think about this. Do I think, okay, next time I have something real personal to talk about, do I want to talk to Bill about that, or do I want to avoid Bill at all costs?
Avoid Bill. At all costs.
Which means then this thing happens in our relationship, which more and more I find reason to avoid you. There are a whole series of topics I don't want to talk to you about. You feel less and less safe to me. And there's this, I talk to people in marriage all the time. I'm saying, in your marriage, you're always doing one of two things. You're always either going closer and closer together, or you're drifting further and further apart. At any time, one of those things is happening. And if we play tag, that drifting apart thing really kicks in because we feel less and less safe to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And more and more, like, well, I'm just going to get a critical response or a defensive response. I don't want to talk to you at all. And that drifting thing just kicks into high gear, mm-hmm. and it wrecks a relationship.
In the catalog of arguments, are there 100 or are there just one? Is there just one?
I know, that's really true. There's just one. We're really talking about who's wrong. And even people say, Glenn, I have this intense need to be right. I think, no, you don't. You have this really, really intense fear of being wrong.
Mm-hmm. I know there's a difference.
Yep, there is a difference.
And because, I'm going to leave some breadcrumbs for you so you can find your way back to that point.
If I really was just trying to be right, I would hear your idea and I would tweak it or improve upon it. If me and you are trying to come to a good answer, we will get there in about a minute and a half. We'll kick around ideas. We'll come up with a really good right answer. We'll feel great about that.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm just trying to be wrong, I'm not wrong. See, then my whole goal is not to find a right answer. My whole goal is to prove to you that you're the one that's wrong. That's a way different conversation.
It is.
We're not looking for a solution. I'm just looking for whose fault it is and who do I want that to be, not me.
And if I want to defend myself and not have it be my fault, then I'm really just not in a we relationship. I'm in a posture myself. And
exactly. I'm no longer in a we conversation. I'm in a me against you conversation.
Yeah.
And that will make me feel anxious because I really am alone in that conversation.
Mm-hmm. So how do we, in the last 2 minutes, how do we... if we're in this game of tag and we realize it, we're walking into the door tonight,
yep.
And what do we say to our beloved that might break this little crazy pattern?
I say, you know, I get, honey, that this is actually 50-50. Jesus said, why do you see the speck in your brother's eye? You don't see the log in your own eye. I want to start by saying what my half of that pattern is, and I want to dedicate myself to changing my half of that pattern. And I invite you to do the same.
Wow, that's going to get someone's attention.
It will get somebody's attention. It will either get them really interested or tick them off. Because somehow in their mind, they will hear that, it's all my fault. And you have to be really, really clear. Nope, I really get. It's our fault. And we each need to change our half of that pattern for this game to change.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I love in your book, you say, what is it about my behavior that contributes to our issue? Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that's a pretty warm, loving, open question.
Right, exactly. And it helps us do what the scripture wants us to do, which is take a close look at ourselves instead of just looking to blame somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Glenn Pickering has been my guest. If you would like to learn more about Glenn, go to glennpickering.com, GLENNPICKERING. He's got a free ebook that he'll send you. And it'll also, if you're so inclined, schedule a free 20-minute consultation with him. And I know from experience that if you get alone with him for 20 minutes on the phone, you're going to walk away with a literal goldmine of stuff. GlennPickering.com. Glenn, thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, being my guest. To goodness. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, yeah. We've so enjoyed this time together. I'd sing, but I can't sing. So that wraps up our first hour. Coming up in the next hour, Rick Madsen and John Afonso are going to be coming in the studio. So I'm always looking forward to these times with the friends in studio. This is the best. I just love this. So
fun.
If you would like to get in the drawing for one of Glenn's books called Tag, all I ask you to do is send me an email, bill@myfaithradio.com, and just put tag in the subject line. Make sure you put your name and address so I know where to send if you win. All right. We'll be back in a little bit. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.